Hello, welcome to LegendCast. My name is Brian Krogsgaard, here with Josh Olsiewicz. Hey, Josh.
Mr. Brian, always good to be with you on this cold, sunny Friday afternoon.
It's cold here as well, down in Alabama. Like, when it gets below freezing, like when the lows are below freezing, that's counts as very cold for our neck of the woods. But we're not here to talk about weather. Although
we will talk about the cloud. Let's be clear.
We'll talk about the cloud and the crypto assets are definitely not hot. I don't know if you call them cold when they're down, but they're not hot. Bitcoin and Ethereum getting super wrecked today. Weekly candles are atrocious. Are we into supports here, or like where we're starting to get comfortable trying to buy the dip? Or is this kind of partway down what we expect? You know, we had an episode called Needs to Make a Decision or something like that at the end of the year, and it made a decision. The decision was to go down. Getting beat up pretty bad. What are you looking at, sir?
I mean, what was the most interesting to me was first we had Peloton fall apart midday yesterday. And then after hours, Amazon fell apart and is continuing to like unravel regardless of like why it happened. That was like earnings call based and like subscriber based or whatever else, whatever the reasoning behind all that. Bitcoin eventually did follow, Netflix after hours specifically.
Yeah. Netflix is and really like 25%
and really like NASDAQ. I forget the ticker. What is it like? Whatever the NASDAQ features are, I'll pull it up in a second, but it's crazy to me how connected, like to like talk about the correlations and understand it is one thing, but to actually like see it happen in real time is still crazy to me. Because I was looking at the NASDAQ features versus like BTC, and NASDAQ definitely moved first and then took BTC with it.
I mean, crypto is actually strong. Wanted to do something basically, and in the midst of the legacy market rolling over, like crypto just couldn't hold itself up. It definitely highly correlated as kind of the liquidity came out of the legacy market, which is a bummer. You know, you'd like to see it be able to hold its own, but it just the gravity was too great.
Yeah, I'm trying to adjust the scale, but yeah, I mean, it's the same thing we've kind of been talking about, this risk off legacy institutional stuff for whatever reason. You can find 10,000 reasons. The biggest ones are probably the Fed and rate hike coming and tapering and all the other stuff, but
yeah, here's a stock just of endless. Just the FANG ETF. I mean, it's completely a fake breakup and then breakdown. And just the question is that a level worth buying or not? But I mean, it's been a really long time since we've seen this type of really hardcore potential downside in stocks. Like, and what's interesting to me is it's different than COVID. Like COVID was, we all knew it was just had a reason to be. This is significantly different. It just feels like a collapse after pure euphoric bullish exhaustion. And what's interesting, S&P is not even down that much. You go look across the ecosystem, and some individual stocks just are incredibly far down. So. Anyway, I was looking at several today. Like, here's an example. One of the SPACs that was hot for a few weeks, Arrival. These things are supposed to have, like, this, like, redemption floor at 10. But obviously, they're not stopping there because only the institutional and people can get those redemptions based on the initial SPAC mergers or whatever. So the risk-free numbers are not risk-free because now it's at 450. and somebody was already in my replies on this one in particular that like some of these SPACs are going to $1 and $2 for the real trash. And it's just because they're not even sustainable to be in business. So like and these are the darlings, right? AMC, another one. I mean, in log, it doesn't look that bad. Take it out of log and you can kind of see how much. I mean, it really went up for 2 weeks, right? It literally topped from the point, you know, from the $13 point where probably most people were in somewhere during that upside. It's fully retraced its biggest portion of its move. The retail traders and stocks are no happier than crypto traders. And I think a lot of what we're seeing is kind of a lagging catch-up trade almost to those. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it seems. It seems like everybody's connected. Everyone's looking at the same thing. Everyone's looking at the VIX. Everyone's looking at the inflation numbers. Everyone's looking at the 10-year. Everyone's looking at everything together. And China's gone now. So it's just us here in the room. Just you, me, and all the U.S. folks. And you can see that on the trading volumes during the week, during U.S. hours. So it's not, you know, it's not a good thing. We can talk about consolidation of trading, of mining, of all this other stuff coming to the U.S. But at the end of the day, I don't think that's a necessarily a good thing for crypto.
We are seeing hash rate make all-time highs. And, I mean, if that happens while price goes down, then profitability also goes down and will put quick pressure on these new U.S. miners. Anyway, across all the land, there's basically three charts that look good. Gold, oil, and the VIX, which makes you really wonder. I don't know. I mean, historically, I actually think it's interesting. You and I have looked at the VIX to gold correlation, and that one's pretty interesting because, you know, typically gold really doesn't moon until VIX tops, and Bitcoin tends to bottom around the VIX tops as well. This VIX situation, it looks like one of those that it's been the top of the range so many times. But 1 week of panic, and this is one of those like VIX to 40 or 50 type of things. So I don't know. Markets don't bottom on Fridays. Isn't that the rule of thumb?
Yeah, well, there was just so many things going through my head yesterday and today, like stuff we've said a billion times, not investment advice, but like Q1's trash, right? Markets don't bottom on Fridays. We're super correlated to S&P and NASDAQ, especially tech stocks. We were already death crossed and all this other stuff. ETH is going to death cross. What we are seeing, like you said, is probably the biggest decoupling of hash rate to price maybe ever. I don't know how that's going to end up, because there's so many operations still scaling up in the US, and I feel like they've kind of already paid for their ASICs, maybe paid for electricity costs or as well, and are just kind of like going to ride it out, you know. What else do you do? just hope for the best. Like I think their break-even costs are significantly lower than current price, so they're going to be fine. We're talking like sub 10K.
And I think that's
where the numbers that I'm seeing. I think
that's what makes it harder. As long as it's like multiples higher than the profitability line, then hash rate is natural to go up, and you'll see people continue to invest. That's not bad for Bitcoin security, though. It's just eventually it's going to put pressure on that profitability.
Yeah, the inefficient miners are going to get squeezed out extremely quickly if price gets anywhere near that 10K level. Certainly not. Yeah.
I don't think
something that I want to happen or that I think is going to happen, but that I think
if we go full bear, you'll see a convergence between hash rate and like 20K, something like that.
Yeah, it's a bit weird. Maybe this is still like coming to some sort of equilibrium post China, as stuff is still kind of migrating and ramping up and ASICs are getting manufactured, and I don't know, just very strange.
It is.
So near term, though, here's the near term stuff. I did see, or we are starting to see finally on some time frame, the beginnings of a bullish divergence, at least on BTC, with lower lows in price, curling up of RSI. What I was worried about coming into this week on the daily was we hadn't yet put in a div of any kind, still, even as we look at it now, no div whatsoever. A lot of people, including myself, are comparing like this period. we talked about this last week, I think, to the current period, a lot of people were hoping that it would act the same. They're hoping that I specifically would be wrong on my bearishness, just as I was wrong in this period. But that's concerning to me that we don't have a bull div yet, because that tells me we need to keep making lows until momentum starts to wane, which is what a bull div is telling you. It's telling you, just as when we're going up, right? Like, if we're making highs on less momentum, the probability that those highs are sustainable and continue diminish significantly. So it's the same thing on the lows here. And we haven't seen that yet. And the other thing that's probably the biggest concern to me is this head and shoulders actually playing out. The fact that it's this large and actually happening is kind of concerning to me, because that brings us to, depending how you want to measure this, on which exchange, 23 to 26, like, that's the target. And that is, that's significantly lower than we are now, for sure.
I tend to think we're pretty close to a bottom, but it's really hard to buy. Really hard.
What I would need to see is a high time frame bull div and or some sort of chart pattern. Because even like going into yesterday, we started to double bottom on low time frames. ETH 2 looked really good. You know, it had this characteristic to it. And then Legacy, just the bottom fell out and that was it. Just ruined it. So we need to start to see stuff like that to counteract this like continuation bearishness fractals that we're seeing everywhere. ETH, I think, still, ETH is just as bad off as BTC, but it still looks better to me. I don't know. What do you think about ETH?
Well, one more thing on Bitcoin. We're about 45, a little more than that, percent off the top. This would be two 45 to 50% moves for Bitcoin. Historically, that's just not good. Like, you're going to get beyond like the 40% zone, and it signals more market over than it does anything else. Ethereum's was, let's see what it was the last time, 61% last time, which, you know, it's not Bitcoin. It tends to be a little bit more reflexive. It's 44% this time. Again, that's, we're starting to get to that territory where it's it's dangerous, right? You just start getting to a point where it makes you a little nervous. The places I like in the chart, anywhere from 2,800 to probably like 2,500. I know that's a 10% range. Would be a sweep of prior lows and well into the congestion zone of where we bottomed in the summer of 2021. So that would be the type of thing that, you know, you could imagine something like this before we find out what's next. I do think it's very hard to be a seller right now, because you're much better off just waiting for a bounce, even if that bounce is like lower, than now, just to see, just because it's a more like it's a better time to sell, like sell that bounce rather than selling the, like being the forced seller on the way down, when it's nuking on a huge weekly candle. On Bitcoin, one more thing that I'd drawn out was kind of this 34 to 35K area that we had many weekly closes around before we finally kind of puked it once. That's another place where you could find strength. If everybody's calling for like sub 30, that's the type of place that would make sense to me to stop. Again, about 10% down. And these levels interest me because like they could happen this weekend. They could happen tomorrow. You know, like the market can be very, very brutal, and can be that fast. That would be the most likely outcome to establish a bottom. And then I'd basically want to see how far can that bounce carry us on the other side of it. I fully intend to trade that. Fully intend to be quite aggressive, risking off on the bounce whenever the bounce comes. Again, if that bounce ends up halting above here or below here, doesn't matter. It just means risking off on the bounce, because the market is not showing strength. I got to figure out how I would play it. You know, last week's candle could have easily been the bottom, but it wasn't. There was plenty more selling to do. I think it wanted to be, and I think the legacy market prevented it. So I think we're going to get a good opportunity, but we're in knife catching territory. And what do they say about catching knives?
Don't. What do they say? I can't remember the thing. Something about, I don't know.
You'll get cut or something?
I don't know. Sure.
I'm holding a knife right now.
ETH, don't hurt yourself now. ETH did have this, like, still has this, like, falling wedge character. Not a wedge. I guess it's a wedge, right? But the reasons ETH looked better to me, it was at its yearly pivot. It was at the 50% retracement from the previous range. And it was setting up for, like, some W double bottom at just below the 200-day moving average. So it looked decently okay. What I do like here against BTC is that it is starting to show signs of a high time frame bull div on RSI as we stabbed lower today and did not make a low in momentum. So I do like that. But, yeah, this looks terrible. This is going to take a quarter to repair whatever's going on here if we stay bullish, which I think is a rough assumption. But like somebody said in the chat, if we go below 30K on BTC, it's good night for a while, for sure. Like, could be a couple of years at that point. Let that pin drop in the room.
We're full of good news today, Josh.
Well, I mean, it's not like the message has changed per se.
No.
Really what I'm looking at on BTC, the high time frame stuff that worries me is this weekly cloud. Historically, if we're below this thing, it's that's a bear market. You know, I had a Twitter poll this week about what does the bear market mean to you? And most people said we're already there or below 40, I think is what the poll results were. We were above 40, maybe it was below 30. Anyway, the point is, everyone's pretty convinced, or will be, if we drop below 34, which is the bottom of the weekly cloud, that, yeah, that's a bear market. And we can just look at the periods where we saw similar activity. The good news is it'll be super, super obvious when we're above the weekly cloud again, right? Like, I wouldn't expect this to just flip instantly. This may take 3 to 6 months to flip back and forth. So that's the good news. Silver linings.
Yeah.
I don't know. I look at this and I think, okay, this is an M double top. This is going from bad to worse because we're dealing with this head and shoulders on the daily time frame. And we got this M double top on the weekly time frame. And, you know, that measures to miners in trouble territory, basically. And maybe there's a narrative there for that. I don't know, but I can't see us getting below 12. I have a hard time seeing us get below 19. I could see us revisiting 30. You know, those local lows from a couple months ago. But if we break below 12, that is like failed experiment territory for me, based on where we are. You know.
Yeah, I'd be literally all in at 20K. Like, I mean, with whatever I have the capacity, buy more.
That's 82%. 2018 was 83% down, 84% down. So hey, I guess it's possible, but that's ultra turbo wreck territory for sure.
Yeah.
Because then you have the unraveling of all these corporate treasuries that are going to have to do something, you know, eventually. Where's their level? Where's their break even? Where's their stop out point, right? Like, yeah, I don't want to have to think about that, you know, on the way down, right? Like, what are the whales doing as we're free falling below 30 potentially?
What's the open interest story look like right now? Somebody was telling me yesterday that if open interest had a similar result to what it did in the 2021 crash that we had in May, that it would be like going from 55 to 29K, except for starting now. like the open interest is equivalent to what we had at the kind of 50 something area before, which is very worrying.
It is. Speaking of Binance, they had a really negative piece from Reuters today come out about compliance and KYC AML stuff. But I don't think the market really cared because there was already enough bad news in the air. I don't know. Open interest looks about the same to me as it did. What is this, 47K?
But I think what's concerning here is, I mean, look at the drop in open interest at the end of November. And we're seeing a very mild drop in open interest now. Like, this move so far the past few days has not had a huge impact on open interest. So it makes you feel like you need one of those like strata shifting, like, you know, that's where like the liquidations occur. It just looks like an earth plate that moves, you know.
Mm-hmm. I know what you mean, yeah.
Yeah, we don't really have that yet on this move, which is concerning.
Yeah. Okay. We can see it.
That's your.
It could be just shorts adding here too, like, you know.
Yeah. I kind of doubt it. It takes a really long time for people to be convinced to short. Like, by the time the short narrative was consensus, during the last bear market, it was so close to the bottom, right? People were like, okay, it broke down from 6K, I will now be perma short forever. And it went down for 2 weeks and then bottomed at 3,100. And then shorts were very bad risk reward after that. Yet people were still doing it and then got short squeezed all the way back through 6K on the upside, all the way to 14K in 2019. So I think by the time shorting is consensus, it's no longer the right play.
And it doesn't even look like DeFi has had significant liquidations yet. They had more liquidations on January 8th and 10th. Just looking at if this data is even correct from Dune. Just make our comp Aave. Past couple days versus 9, 8, 9, 10. You know, so this is another argument. Like you're saying, like, we need this cleansing of OI that we haven't gotten yet.
I mean, there was quite a bit of moving around on chain yesterday that was rumored. Causing some of the exaggerated moves on the Ethereum side of things. And I mean, I can say for sure a ton of Ethereum stuff is based on, you know, lower leverage, but collateralized activity. And it's super common, very reasonable even to do. Like, you know, you take 30% of loan against something and you think you're safe, and then it goes down 60-70%, you're not safe. Oftentimes people will do that. They'll deposit their ETH as collateral and then borrow stables and go farm stables or whatever. And somebody in the chat says, yes, it's not rumored. You could see the XYZ wallet. That's true. That is what I was hinting at. It's just that on-chain collateral stuff, it's very dangerous. You got to think, okay, I want to farm stable coins. I want to get that sweet, sweet yield. But what if you then lose all your collateral trying to earn like another 15-20% on your stables? So, you know, beware. My personal thought on that is only do it if you have plenty of money to recollateralize, pay back the loan. And you're just doing it for capital efficiency purposes.
Or just keep the leverage low, you know?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think most of this is low leverage. You can't really do high leverage on chain. You're like
keep it lower, damn it.
keep it lower in your capacity to repay it. Like, I think if you're taking 30, 40, 50% leverage on your entire account, that's dangerous. If you're doing it on a portion and you can like repay that from other funds, then that's fine. But just my thoughts.
Yeah, makes sense. ETH as well, the cloud, you know, doesn't look much better. I mean, if we get to 22, it is. I'm going to try not to be like hyper optimistic, but yes, we could bounce here. We could be okay. Doesn't look as bad as BTC, but we got to do something soon because it's been like 25 weeks of down, you know, since November 8th. It has only been down.
25 what
It hasn't been 20. I'm joking. Oh, I'm just saying it feels like.
Well, it feels like it enough to where I was like needing clarification on whether that was true.
6 of the past 10 weeks have been red. 8 of the past 10 weeks have been red or neutral. So
here's another fun one. Ethereum topped 73 days ago. 73 days. Well, that's a long time.
Some like Astro thing?
No, I'm just saying that's a long time. Okay. That's a long time for a down move that, we can talk as if things are bearish. I refuse to be bearish here. You know,
it's just like a slow moving train wreck at this point.
Yeah. But I think it's probably about to be a fast moving, you know, but it's like, that's not when you jump off. You wait till it bounces back. And I'm not willing to be like, yesterday would have been a great time to delever on that green candle that legacy markets were telling a different story than crypto. I just wasn't thinking about it. I got complacent intraday complacency.
Well, we looked great until end of day.
Yeah. You know? I mean,
until
yeah.
Nasdaq sold off.
It was making a very convincing kind of double bottom argument yesterday. And now
we're doing stuff and things, and now
we're seeing escalation. Gosh, I just look at all the congestion here. You know, it was quite a lot. And we just swept it. We're in Keyboard Monkey's levels. I know he's starting to actively trade this and trying to find the bottom. He doesn't have to be perfect, doesn't have to nail it, but if he's paying attention, we're within days, a few days of being at the bottom in my mind. I think he's pretty good at finding those moments to pay attention. So Josh, let's assume we find a bottom. Don't know where it is. Maybe it's right this moment. Maybe it's at 20% lower. What even interests you? Do you want to find the high velocity altcoin stuff? Do you want to just stick to Bitcoin and Ethereum? What interests you as a buyer?
I'm selling anything that I haven't already sold at a 50% retracement. Ideally, that's the target I'm looking for. So for ETH, that would be 3,800. Like, yeah, that's the 50%. As far as buying stuff?
Emotionally, when it gets back there, we will all be thinking, back to the same old bullish grind, baby. Bottom sellers wrecked.
Right. It's possible. Like, I could be perpetually wrong until the end of my days that, you know, we're just in this range forever. But at this point, I'm happily letting go of any ETH at 38. I'm letting go of BTC at like 50, 52, whatever the level is there. Q1's not bullish. It just isn't. I don't know. Wait for Q2. Wait for April, March, April, or April, May, June. We have great track records historically of doing stuff. Even on this chart, look at April. Look at April, May for ETH. Insane. I don't know. So I wouldn't get too down about it in the near term, because this thing, like, who knows? Like, if this is just going to keep following the NASDAQ, and the NASDAQ's just going to keep selling off, right? Like, there are no levels that matter, because it's just going to follow whatever the NASDAQ's doing. So maybe we should just chart that and figure out where that might bottom, because this is almost irrelevant, you know. If this is going to look strong 1 second and then 10 seconds later look like it does now, you know, I don't know. I don't know what to do. I was seeing NASDAQ levels. People were talking about the 200-day moving average, and somebody was talking about this level too, which was the previous kind of local highs, local top, all-time highs, local lows here. So that would definitely be a zone that you don't want to pass for sure for on the NASDAQ. But
the S&P's reaching the 200-day right now. My guess is it opens up Monday, taps that, and bounces. But the S&P is different than NASDAQ. The S&P tends to do a bit better just because of the fundamental structure. There's kind of always something moving positively for the S&P.
Because even when I look at, like, just because I have these up on my screen, look at any on-chain thing, like on-chain people are going to say on-chain stuff's going to save you. The technical people like me are going to tell you the technicals are more important. I just don't see anything on-chain right now besides dormancy flows, which aren't going to save you. That's saying like, this is a massive buy yet. This is the Puel multiple, which is telling you how rich are the miners today versus the past year. And it's got a ways to go before that signal kicks in on investment advice, certainly, but MVRV, another good one, similar to NVT, long ways down on that one, you know?
Yeah. What was that one that was telling us it was the peak and we were like, I don't know, this time it's different. And then it was again for like 100% hit rate.
That was PiCycle.
Yeah.
PiCycle, even myself included. This was the only thing that to me at the time that looked toppy. Hasn't been wrong.
And we talked about it and then it was.
I don't know how to read this from a bottom perspective. One thing I like for that is the 2-year MA multiplier, which for BTC, that's at 30, which is nice. This just gives you some.
This is one though we kept looking at thinking like BTC is not really overheated yet. It certainly did not. Have you ever applied the 2-year MA multiplier to crypto market cap as a whole, minus stablecoins? I guess not. I mean, it's hard to cycle out the stablecoins from market caps, but I'd be really interested to see this with the market as a whole. Not that you have to find that, but I wonder if that's more shows overheating better than Bitcoin, since Bitcoin was relatively slow this year. ARK Innovation ETF is another interesting one for me because it is on the 200-week moving average, which was a epic COVID low. It looks like, I mean, this looks like the buy zone to me. I can't think in my head how that's possible, but that's what it says. Like if
it looks atrocious. No
of course it does. It looks like a knife catch, but a knife catch on a 200-week moving average, which if I have nothing else, that's the one that I'll take. Because historically it can be quite nice. So that has me interested in ARK. Not going to lie. First time in a very long time I've been interested in ARK. My concern with that is ARK is full of like active retail money of people who will capitulate and whatever for a long time. So it doesn't have the same passive flows. And so it, you know, could end up below that and full elevator down another 50% from here would be kind of the $50 range. If it loses this, I wouldn't be interested in it until sub 60. But based on pure weekly moving averages, that tells me to buy ARK, which I don't want to do, but that's what it tells me to do. Just something I wanted to bring up.
Understood. So this is the 2-year. This isn't minus stables, but it didn't get mega overheated. Mm-hmm. So this is total market cap, crypto market cap. Didn't get mega overheated on the 2-year like it has previously. Got close, right? It tapped it. It's hard to see all these get overheated previously and then read this as like, yeah, now's the time, you know. But it wasn't wrong, right? It definitely got to that level, and the level on the way down is significantly lower. I think ETH actually looks decently okay because on the, who's got the most? Is it Polo? ETH has, I love pulling up all these old things. ETH level is at 16 on the 2-year, but on the 1-year, it's already like at that level. Hmm. So depending on how you want to read this, but again, this wasn't wrong in that it arguably tapped that level just as it had previously in 2017. The problem I have with this read on ETH is that backtesting tells you that the duration was a year, right? So
could be under it for quite a while,
right? So you got to be careful with that, obviously. But
I think Well, what that can be, and I was actually thinking about this today, because I've had friends, and they all did it at the top again. Friends, family, whoever, they're like, hey, should I be buying crypto? What should I be buying? Et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, I always say the same spiel after I'm feeling like euphoric or whatever on the top side. I'm like, don't buy anything unless it's down at least 50%. So as we're getting to these points, I'm like trying to think, okay, do I text them? Do I let them know, hey, you know, getting a pretty big dip. Here's maybe a decent place to buy. Might be bottom, might be generational top. Don't know. my gut would say, talking to those folks, if you're wanting to get your exposure, and while that's in the shaded green territory, maybe that's just when you turn on your dollar cost average and say, be patient, you know?
I wouldn't do anything quickly here expecting anything like we had in 2021 far as bullishness.
2022 is not a get-rich-quick year. It's just not. If anybody gets rich quick in 2022, it's because they've mastered the art of difficult trading on leverage, both directions. That's not me. I much prefer a uptrending market where I can buy something on spot, wait, sell and profit. Yes, corn maximalist. 2022 has barely started. And my point is, throughout this year, if your point is to get rich quick, I would not count on it. Whereas 2021, my confidence level for upside potential on the year was very, very, very high because of the structure of the market going in. Structure of the market this time going in, there's a lot better reasons for money to come out of the market than to go in. So that's my thought.
And I wouldn't take it personally when someone doesn't agree with you. This is not you, but anybody in general. People always love to fight about the YouTube comments. For some reason, just attract the best type of people who like are arguing with me, arguing with what I'm saying. It's like, guys, I'm just reading the chart. I'm just being objective here. Yeah. Yes, 2022 just started, but look at it. Did we have a head and shoulders going into 2021? No, as a matter of fact, we had an inverted head and shoulders on DeFi going into 2021. You know, and look how that turned out.
Yeah, it was pure flows.
DeFi also getting just
crushed.
I was going to say slobber knockered, but that's like not a term that's probably socially acceptable. So, ragdolled? I don't know. I don't know what the term is. It just doesn't look good. It looks terrible. Maybe you could argue like falling wedge, but then I draw this and I'm thinking, oh, there's another head and shoulders here. That's all I can see. It's all I can keep seeing because we got a series of highs on some neckline. You know, it's the same reason people saw the triple bottom stuff here. It's the same thing. You know, the same reason we saw that inverted head and shoulders down here. Same rationale. You just can't not instantly see that.
Can I show you something that's really sad?
Sure, why not?
ETF's not gone well.
Yeah, I can't, as somebody who works for Valkyrie, I cannot comment on ETFs.
I understand. I'm just making a note myself. Okay. That the ETF's not gone well. Also, GBTC and stuff, like record levels. So I'll make those notes. Record discount levels, rather. A variety of things that just kind of assist in our general points of view here. The more I look at things, Josh, this cluster down here.
The more depressed you become? Wow.
Yes, partially. Partially because it's like I don't want to sell, but I think there's a chance of lower. Like, you know, like that last 10 or 20% down is just a gut punch, but it's just one you know you need to absorb. And I think our real bounce is going to come from somewhere in this range from the prior summer. I'd personally be surprised if we swept those lows, like if we get into the 20s. I think we'll be here in the mid 30s and that people will be calling for the mid 20s and it's more likely to be a bottom. Sweep these lows. Don't sweep these lows. That's kind of my 2 cents. And I've been looking at that level for a while. Just,
Yeah, the chart just looks so broken. I don't even know like what it's going to take. It's going to take time. That's, I guess, the only thing I can say with certainty. It's definitely going to take time. It's going to take, you know, this period, this May, July, whatever, that was 60 days. We're still like unraveling the top. So it's going to take time to start to find the bottom. I don't think we're there yet on DeFi, especially. I haven't looked at Curve today, but
oh, that's good.
A lot of the other stuff I had been watching, not looking good. Now, this is what, a multi-month low for DeFi perp. Matic, I'm sure, didn't break out. If everything else didn't, yeah. I mean, Matic,
it's failing.
Matic had that head and shoulders. I can't remember if we talked about it last week or not, but.
We talked about it being a risk reward area.
Because we were saying like if it makes lower low, that's it, right?
Yeah,
I think that's what I said.
Guess what? It's over.
Guess what? That's it. Made a lower low, broke below the daily cloud curve.
I've got
curve was kind of volatile.
It's super volatile because it's pretty illiquid. It's just one of those. I always want to call them a Haram candle. Candle, and it's like
Haram.
Yeah, but it's not what it's called. It's like a
Harambe.
Yeah, that's what I always want to call it. I think it's like a Hashimi candle or something. I don't know. Point is, opened, now acting like it wants to close at the end. No wick candle. And it's right at kind of the pivotal weekly closing level around 350. Yeah. I'm glad I earned yield on it, but I'm upset that I own so much of Curve right now. And it's pretty illiquid as well, so it just exaggerates any of these other moves. I do think Curve will do better than many others as a reversal occurs. It's probably one of the things that I'll hold. But it doesn't look good.
No, I don't really know of a chart that does look good. I didn't look at like Luna or AVAX or Sol today, but Luna looks okay. Doesn't look terrible, but again, you're seeing the same sort of thing you saw with Matic, that I can't unsee this on every single chart in some variation of a head and shoulders. Just everywhere.
Sol looks finished.
A failure to make highs.
Every time I say this, people get mad at me. It just looks finished. I tried to trade it even, I broke even, but it lost the 200, 20 kind of converging down on that, losing the prior level. It just looks so bad. Sol's one of the worst looking charts in crypto to me.
Wow, that's going to get misquoted or quoted properly.
I mean, it could recover from here, but would you hold this beyond 170 or something on the top side? Like, sure, that would be a fantastic trade. But this is not a chart of health. This is a chart that looks like it needs to bounce around and chill. Like, it's just going to do, you know, it looks like it's going to do that to me. That's what it looks like it's going to do. I'm sorry. I don't mean to be mean. I don't know if it'll go all the way to 50 or whatever.
I don't know if it'll go all the way to zero, but
like maybe it'll be like this, right? Maybe it'll stop at 80. Maybe it'll be a fantastic reaccumulation. I don't think you're going to be able to sell your Solana at $200 anytime
soon. We've long past selling our Sol, my friend.
I just think that trade is done. The fun part was all of this. Okay. It's no longer fun. It's just, it was distribution and, it's going to be cope.
It, all the same analysis applies from BTC and ETH. You know, it needs a bull div first on the daily. It hasn't got that yet. It broke the pivot on the yearly, which isn't good. Broke the VPVR profile, which isn't good. Broke below the 200, which isn't good. It broke below the cloud, which isn't good. All these things are telling you, yeah, sentiment isn't bullish. That's pretty obvious at this point. But and you've got this like channel that you're in as well. Just all sorts of bad. Now, this could be bottoming out all the way between 25 and 50, which is not rocket science, just the previous consolidation.
Yeah. No.
And to be let fair, me just talk about. Go ahead. No, I just.
when we talked about that with ETH in the last bear market, people were pointing at the same levels, 30 to 50 or whatever it was, some congestion area for ETH. And it never quite got all the way there. It bottomed at 84 or wherever Substratum was shorting it. So, you know, maybe Solana doesn't go all the way back to $20, but it's not good. It's not good.
Well, this, I'm not going to talk about Netflix. To talk about Netflix, I'm just talking about the technicals here. But this is why I like VPVR so much. It just tells you, to me, I don't know, for some reason, it helps me see where the levels are versus like, yeah, I know there's a bunch of candles here. It happened. But it, like, it makes sense to me that, yeah, this is the level that people are going to be watching because that's where the previous activity was. So we need, like Bitcoin, we need to not go through this like a hot knife through butter and stay above 30. Because once you lose that zone like Sol has, it's very hard to just quickly bust up again, you know? That takes a lot of time.
And the challenge, the big challenge is outperformance. It's not even like to say it can't go up. It's like, why would you hold it versus other stuff? Like, this is where this is where majors tend to shine, right? They go down a little less and they tend to outperform during the whatever, like kind of disbelief phase or whatever. It's hard to want to hold a lot of those things to me.
Yeah. I mean, well, you could stake it.
Sure.
You could DCA, you could do some sort of DeFi thing that I'm probably not very good at describing, but some sort of complex thing on that chain, bridging something, you know, something like that. I'm just not saying that's what you should be doing, but those are options for people, right?
Yeah. And one other Solana chart, Solana relative to ETH, just looks like a pretty big distribution pattern to me.
Bro, you're just an ETH maxi, okay? And you're just going to see what you want to see.
It looks like a big distribution pattern. I'm sorry, I would not want to see this below 0.04 if I'm holding Solana. I would not want to see this below 0.04.
I don't know if it's White Coffee and Distro, but it looks probably pretty close to White Coffee and Distro, as in, that's toppy.
Below 0.04, I would expect 0.024.
One that bounced like crazy was Link ETH, because they finally stopped selling and they announced proof of stake. And probably nobody watching this today or listening heard the hearing yesterday, the congressional hearing on mining. But one of the biggest people against proof of work mining was this guy named R.A. Jules from Cornell. And I didn't even know this during the thing, but he is the chief scientist at Chainlink. So it makes sense why he's like all anti proof of work.
Nice.
But he didn't disclose that.
We got a question from the Venomancer. How the blank is cash king when the Fed printed trillions of dollars of it? Well, there are some assets that are doing well. Gold and oil. The thing is, the market likes to be ahead of these trends. So I think a lot of these asset prices inflated because they expected inflation. By the time inflation shows up, like, they kind of priced a lot of that in. So it's a matter of figuring out what's next and what's a relative value as well. Like, what do you get a better value out of real estate or out of gold, or do you get better value out of Peloton or Zoom or Shopify or Solana? And that's kind of the categories that people are going to put those in. People are going to put most crypto in the same slate as growth stuff. Now, I don't think that's across the board necessarily true, but we have to see how it plays out. How does it play out with Bitcoin and maybe Ethereum under the 1559 era as a risk off asset or a inflation positive asset versus a growth asset? I think there's a chance of it. I don't know. To date, typically the market treats Bitcoin as a risk on asset. I've said before that I think Bitcoin is a chaos asset. Maybe it still has time ahead of it. I don't mind owning Bitcoin, but you have to be able to live with extraordinary volatility and also with longer term thought process. I don't love cash either. That's one of the hardest things of this whole situation is like, how do you own something where you're not a big believer in it? The ideal is cash with yield, right? And that's where I look into real estate or yield farming or whatever else. I've been trying for quite a while to establish my crypto positions in places where I feel like they did better as value assets with income and yield generation kind of characteristics. That's why I don't want to hold the, you know, narrative driven stuff like the based on growth and whatever. But anyway,
I don't know. Everywhere I'm looking, there's no place to hide. There's just no place to hide.
I don't know what you're talking about, man. Gold's literally the best chart I've ever seen.
The one day I saw a bunch of Peter Schiff tweets over the past couple of days. Of course, because, you know, that's his MO. That's his brand. He's got to come out and attack Bitcoin. That's fine. You know, good for him. But it was funny because the weekly gold chart on the cloud actually looks decent in that it may have a chance to actually break up here.
I mean, I'm looking at the monthly here. I absolutely love it. Love it.
I mean, look at that cup and handle potential too. Again, yeah. Like chart patterns should not be something you force and they should be easily just instinctual, right? Like instantly I saw that. I'm like, oh, that's a cup and handle, right?
It is just an incredible, painful consolidation. That's what makes it a great consolidation. Is gold was mocked for a year and a half.
Rightfully so, let's be clear.
Rightfully so, because it was not doing its job. And now that everything else, when inflation is actually here at 7%, everything else that priced it in sucks. The relative value is gold, which is now a point of mockery. And the chart is freaking prime. Even some of the biggest gold bugs I hear talk are like skeptical of this as a breakout because they've been so punished. And I look at this and I'm like, you know what? I don't hate it. I legitimately, there are some ways to actually earn yield on gold backed stables in crypto that I'm looking at.
That sounds like a nightmare.
Yeah.
So wasn't that like, what was the one that got seized to like early on before BTC exists?
Eagle.
Liberty Reserve.
Liberty Eagle. Yeah.
Something like that.
I'm legitimately wondering if I can do a gold USD pool and earn like 15-20% yield on it. It's one of the convex pools. There's some alpha for the 500 people that are listening to the stream.
I don't know. Yeah, but the chart looks fine. You know, it looks way better than everything else. But Curve also looked fine a couple of weeks ago and slowly just followed the rest of everything into the sea. So I don't know, you know, like it does look really good. The cup and handle looks real, but
oil's the other one that looks good.
That's a chart I haven't looked at today. Good as in,
like it's going to go to $150 per barrel.
150?
Yep.
That's like war territory, isn't it?
Yeah. My line of demarcation or whatever going back to 2006 is $75. When it broke out above it this time, that's when to me it's like game on. Back to the range highs, the trade from 85 to 140 with certainly a lot of emotional turmoil and political turmoil at 100 just because of round number bias. I think gold's going over $100 this year and is it probably going to $140 a barrel? And you're looking at like $5 plus gasoline in that scenario. Talk about pissed off, right? Oh man, the outcry about that is going to be huge.
Well, the political landscape already is interesting. Like, we've got all this Fed stuff in a whatever year, political voting year. I can't think of the term. So we've got that. Midterms. And then we've got midterms. Yeah. Then we've got all these candidates already coming out and saying that they want to run for president in 2024. We've got Biden, who's kind of forced to say he's going to run, because if he doesn't, then everyone's just going to think of him as a lame duck, even though there's no way like an 82-year-old should be president.
He can't function now. Like,
I agree, but I'm just saying, like, it's so bizarre to think like that if he doesn't say he's running, then everyone's just going to consider him like as a write-off or something, you know? I don't know. I hope he doesn't run. It's going to be insane if he does. But yeah.
Listen, here's my thing. I refuse to vote for anyone over 65 in the next presidential election. Like,
I'm right there with you. I want age limits and I want term limits.
Get out of here.
Yeah. But I guess my point was, if oil gets up there, that's going to be interesting for whoever's running for president in 2024.
I can very much imagine oil prices and sustained multi-year inflation and the Fed trap at low interest rates, which makes it hard to control inflation. They can't increase interest rates either, so real interest rates will be quite negative, being the issue of 2024.
Yeah. I mean, it's already, again, in that hearing, when the representatives got political, that's, of course, everything they're mentioning is like COVID and inflation. But yeah, that narrative isn't going anywhere anytime soon.
COVID's over.
I said that months ago, and yeah. You know, I was wrong, apparently. So.
You weren't. No. You weren't wrong. We just decided to treat it like it's not over. This variant, as we've talked about, you're a biologist. You're a health expert. Okay. This variant was weak and it should have been treated as such. This should be the variant that we don't care about. This should be the variant where you say, assume normal life. And instead, people are trying to, do the whole shutdown shebang. And it's not the way to do it. Just let this variant run its course. Everybody who wanted to make their choice, if they're above 5 years old, I feel bad for the youngest kids, but if they're above 5 years old, they could be vaccinated. If they're under five, then they're lower risk. Just get back to life, man. Get back to life. This variant is weak. The virus wants to stay alive in your body. Whatever. COVID will be a thing. It just doesn't have to be a thing that shuts down our society. Get out of here. This is a political thought by Brian Krogsgaard.
Yeah, I don't even know where to take that. I think we're just TFG. We're too far gone just on everything. So, you know, we're just going to have to deal with the fallout of vaccine mandates, basically, at this point, one way or the other. But yeah, I don't know if you're vaxxed or not by this point. It's just kind of is what it is.
It's your choice. It's your choice now. Like, do I wish people would have done it? Yes. I'm pro-vaccine. For myself and my family, I think it was the smarter thing for other folks to do too. But if they don't, they've now chosen. They've made their choice, and that's fine. This is America.
Yep. And I think that's about all we have time for today.
And Bitcoin and ETH are dumping. I'm going to be buying them soon.
Yeah, I'd watch that div, guys. I'm telling you, guys and gals, watch that low time frame div.
Watch the div.
On BTC and ETH. It's not going to save you, just like dormancy flows aren't going to save you, but it's going to give you a better idea than not when things are starting to calm down. Yeah, Legacy doesn't bottom on a Friday, so it's going to be an interesting weekend for crypto, for sure.
Yep. We've got 45 minutes left in the Legacy market. I think crypto will bottom in the next 30 minutes. Have a complacent a complacent weekend, and then Monday a little bit of fear on Monday.
I don't know. We didn't even mention it, but Coinbase all time low today. Hood all time low. Robinhood all time low.
Terrible.
Just bad.
Bye. Monuments crumble.